Okay, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls as we continue to chat with St. John Hunt about the life and legacy of his father, E. Howard Hunt, and his mother. St. John Hunt has a couple books called Bond of Secrecy and Dorothy, The Murder of E. Howard Hunt's Wife, Watergate's Darkest Secret. So there's so much to talk about. We'll open up the lines and come to you next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, St. John Hunt with us, of course. St. John, do you think that plane that went down with your mother aboard was taken down deliberately, or do you think at this point it was just a bad accident?
No, I think with all the facts, all the things that happened directly when that flight crashed, you have to start considering that it's beyond coincidence that all these events added up to that. So, no, I think the plane was deliberately taken down in order to prevent my mother from calling a press conference with Michelle Clark the next day or so, and to keep my father quiet. And as a matter of fact, in one conversation I had with my father down in Miami, he said that he had always known that she was taken out, although he had never discussed it with me up until that moment. He was getting a lot of things off his chest because death was at the doorstep, and so he was just unloading all this on me. it was difficult to hear that, but he had tears in his eyes, and he was gripping my hand so tightly, and he just said that he was worried about what would happen to his kids. He was in prison. They killed your mother. He said, they killed your mother. I was in prison, and I couldn't protect you children.
Well, and I got to tell you, the CIA did something that the mob never did, and that was go after family members.
Right, that's true. I guess that is a mob rule. You don't go after family members. But the CIA, that's, you know, to take, if you want to get rid of one person, it is a classic CIA way to throw off suspicion on the one person. In other words, the investigation then about her death didn't center on her death, it centered on the plane crash. So if you want to take somebody out, you choose a very public place and orchestrate some sort of disaster, which then will throw off the direction of the investigation. So nobody ever investigated her death, but they investigated the crash, and of course that was controlled by Nixon's people.
How have you endured all of this personally?
Well, to be totally honest with you, George, I went into years of various substance abuses and
depression.
Depression and just numbing myself. It was just so much to take in. I mean,
oh my God.
Later on in my life, I didn't really know what was true and what was not true. You know, I'd heard all the allegations of my father's being one of the three tramps, for example, being involved in the JFK assassination.
In Dallas at the time, yeah.
Yeah, and I just had to find out for myself what really happened as I was growing up. And, of course, the more I looked, the darker it got. And but I'm satisfied that that my father was a good man and he believed in what he was doing. And of course, my mother was a wonderful person who tried to protect her family. And she must have known that her end was coming near as well, because you can't fight a war with the White House. I mean, my parents were basically at war with Nixon, and that's just not going to turn out very well for anybody except for Nixon, which he held on to his presidency for a bit longer, but brought down anyways.
Do you believe your father was in Dallas on that fateful day on November 22nd, 1963?
I do believe that. I do believe that, because if he stated that he was a bench warmer, he's not going to be anywhere else but Dallas. And there is a photograph of one. It's a long shot of people crossing the street, walking towards the grassy knoll, and there's one gentleman by himself in a trench coat and a hat. From a distance, it looks just like my dad. I mean, he had the same coat, the same hat, kind of angular face. So, if there's a photograph with him in it, that's got to be the one.
Yeah, indeed. And in your opinion, and I'm going to have you speculate, Who do you think was behind the killing of JFK?
Well, I think it was the CIA, not as an agency per se, but
rogue members.
Rogue members. I think you have William Harvey, who was involved. You have my father, who was involved. You have David Ali Phillips, who handled Oswald. You have the Cubans from Operation 40 that were trained by CIA that wanted revenge. My father wanted revenge. Harvey wanted revenge. Harvey was in a lot of trouble with RFK. Once RFK found out about these midnight missions that Bill Harvey was responsible for sending these little boats out, these little fast-running gunboats to Cuba from Florida to burn sugarcane fields and water towers and destroy communication lines, just do anything to mess up Castro over there. He became incensed, and he demoted William Harvey to Rome to work in the Rome station. But Harvey didn't stop. He kept his Cuban agitators going against Cuba. He just didn't care. He wanted Castro removed. And of course, the attempts, as I said earlier in this broadcast, the attempts against Castro continued all the way through Bill Clinton's presidency. So this is like an ongoing obsession with the American government. I mean, Castro.
Can't believe he's dead, St. John. I mean, he averted all these assassination attempts. Part of me thought he'd live forever.
I know, it seemed that way, didn't it? He was the last man standing, basically, I think.
Yeah, he was.
Whether he was a good man or a good person or not, I think that's yet to be told. Certainly, there was a lot of executions and deaths during the once he took control of Cuba.
Oh my God! All the Batista supporters were gunned down.
Yeah, I mean, there's some estimates by professors and people that know these kind of things place the total anywhere from 15,000 to upwards of 100,000 over the 30 or 40 years that he was in control over there. But, you know, I mean, when you tally that against, you know, Hitler or Stalin
you're right.
Anybody else, I mean, 100,000 is a horrible amount of people, but compared to those guys, it's a drop in the bucket. But it's part of, as my father would have said, it's just collateral damage. It's part of securing your power. If you're going to be a revolutionary and take over government, it just doesn't stop there. You have to make sure that all the loose ends are brought in and closed down. And I think Castro wasn't a bloodthirsty man, but he certainly knew that, and he certainly had to make every attempt to stay in power. I don't know why he didn't allow free elections once
he did change. He surely changed instead of coming in under the pretense that he did. They say that under his control, his regime, he killed up to 144,000 people.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I mean, I have to believe that because as any person that studies revolutions knows that this is a part of what has to happen. I mean, certainly it happened every time the CIA deposed a president from a foreign country. My dad, for one, I asked my dad at one point, how do you reconcile the fact that once your coup in Guatemala was a success, how do you come to terms with the fact that 60,000 people were rounded up and murdered? And he thought for a moment. He goes, I don't think about it, but it's collateral damage. It's part of war. And I said, but Papa, we weren't at war. this was not war. And he goes, well, it is war, Saint. You just have to put it in that context. You just don't think about those things, he said.
All right.
I don't know how guys, can do that.
Let's go to the phones for you. Let's go east of the Rockies. Joe, Long Island, New York. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, my uncle set up the phones for JFK on the East Coast. He had been a Navy guy. He was really sharp, articulate, died 5 years ago. Now, he insisted it was Lyndon Johnson, along with the CIA, and gave me all sorts of details. And he wasn't a storyteller either. He wasn't, So I wonder what you think
Wow.
about the Johnson role potentially, or had you heard that?
Oh, he has heard that, but what do you think of that, St. John?
Well, that's what my father told me in his deathbed confession, that Lyndon Johnson was definitely at the top of the list of persons involved, knowingly involved in the overthrow of the. It was an internal coup d'état, basically. Kennedy was viewed as a threat to national security. As a matter of fact, on the day before Kennedy was assassinated, this will be November 21st, there was a French journalist doing an interview with Castro, and that French journalist named Jean Daniel, and he had been given a note from President Kennedy to take to Fidel Castro, in which the note says, I think there's room for an understanding between us. I think we can work through this. I want peace. And it seems that you want peace. We've got to get rid of these hostilities. Castro read the note in front of Danielle, and said, "You know, this man Kennedy, he's not as a bad as man as I thought. He wants a peace between us, and I think there's a very good chance we can do this." So Kennedy was just, off the charts in terms of what the rest of the government, the military-industrial complex, wanted to have happen, which was they didn't want to peace with Cuba, and they didn't want peace with the Soviets. They wanted to continue this, this war mongering type of, behavior that they had started way back in the 40s when they helped the British overthrow Iraq.
Next up, we've got Cornelius in Louisiana. Hello, Cornelius.
Hey, George, and thank Gina, and yeah, I guess you gave Tommy the night off.
Tommy's got the night off. That's right.
St. John, I wish I could have met you. I went to the Oswald conference, but I did meet Tommy and, of course, George. My question for you is a little bit different because I told Gina one thing, but I'm thinking about this. Have you ever looked at or studied, since we have Martin Luther King Week and stuff, what about Martin Luther King? Do you think anything, or did your dad know anything about that? I'll take my answer off here, and thank y'all.
My dad, was a racist. I'll just admit that right off the bat. He didn't care for anybody that wasn't a wide-angle assassin Protestant WASP, and so he never discussed King. But you could hear him every once in a while rant about the Kennedys, and he would. I could hear him sometimes say, "We got to finish the job," and hit Ted. So, certainly, I believe that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated by members of the FBI in collusion with some military as well as some extremist, white extremist groups. I believe that.
In your career now, that you look back at all of this, are these things happening still today?
I would say even more so.
Oh boy.
Maybe not quite as obvious as an invasion of another country, but when you consider how the events since Kennedy's assassination have, the big problem that the CIA and the rest of the military-industrial complex had with Kennedy is that Kennedy wanted to continue dictating foreign policy, which is, in fact, what a president should be doing. He has his advisors, and then he needs to dictate foreign policy. But the CIA wanted to dictate foreign policy instead, and it was a tug of war, and so Kennedy had to be gotten rid of. But since then, you can see the level of crimes committed. I mean, what did Nixon do? He approved of the cover-up of a break-in and so forth. But in later presidencies, such as Poppy Bush and Bush Jr., you had a level of criminal behavior that just exceeded anything that had taken place before. I mean, the Iran-Contra Gate, the bringing of cocaine into this country with, Felix Rodriguez, who was also Operation 40. And these Operation 40 guys are still, there's still Operation 40 going on. Maybe different people, but Felix and all those guys were active in both Bush administrations.
Okay, let's take another call or two before the break. We will go to Oscar in South Pasadena, California. Oscar, hello there.
Yeah, in fact, my question was about Herbert Walker Bush.
What was his role during the JFK assassination, as well as the attempted assassination of the very president we revere, Ronald Reagan? Did he try to assassinate Ronald Reagan when he was a VP? And what was his role? And did your father know or get to talk to or have any opinions of G.W. Herbert Walker Bush when he was co-director of the CIA under Nixon?
Well, that's an interesting take.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of speculation about Bush Sr. as being someone that played a strong hand in the assassination of JFK. I personally don't believe that Bush Sr. was an instrumental player in that. If he was in Dallas that day, he was there as a spectator. There is those photographs, which may or may not be Bush Sr. But if you listen to Nixon's tapes, certainly he's talking to Henry Kissinger about Bush Sr. And they people considered Bush Sr. to just be sort of a limp-wristed weakling. And I don't think, and that was the prevailing opinion of George H.W. Bush. He wheedled his way into positions of power, and he became vice president because Gerald Ford pestered Ronald Reagan so much, and Bush was from Texas and could bring in the Texan vote and all that sort of thing. But back in '63, you know, Bush Senior was just—he was young and he was not experienced enough to be given any kind of a serious role in the assassination. Other than that, I don't know what role he could have played. He certainly wasn't part of the assassination team. He certainly wasn't in charge of extrication of the team or anything like that. So, I really don't have any personal knowledge. My father never discussed Bush Senior or Bush Junior with me.
St. John, where do we get your books?
Oh, you can get my books through Amazon. It's probably the easiest and best price place, Bond of Secrecy and Dorothy, and the book I wrote with Roger Stone, Jeb and the Bush Crime Family.
Did you hear where Roger thinks he was poisoned? Did you hear about that today?
I didn't know he made that public.
He did on Alex Jones's show.
Wow, I'm surprised he's going public with it. I talked to Roger. Roger told me last week that he had been poisoned. I mean, I knew he was laying low after the election was over.
Yeah.
But it was only last week in a phone conversation. I worked with Roger pretty closely, and he told me about this, that the results of his blood had been sent to the Center for Disease Control.
Let's talk a little bit about that, St. John, as much as you can when we come back, and then we'll take some final calls in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget, always email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back to Coast, St. John Hunt with us. And St. John, we're talking about Roger Stone. Well, he made these revelations on our friend Alex Jones's show and claims that he was poisoned. Well, doctors apparently have confirmed that he was poisoned by political enemies who wanted to try to stop him from exposing the truth. This is a scary story, St. John.
Yeah, it's cause for great concern. I'm pretty close with Roger. He helped me out a lot a couple of years ago, and took me on as a writer. I've been working with him closely on several books: the Clinton War on Women's book, the Jeb and the Bush Crime Family book. We're working on a JFK Jr. book now as we speak, and I do other writings for Raj, some op-eds and so forth. But I hadn't heard from him for about 2 weeks, and this was a long time not hearing from my friend and my boss. I finally, we touched base, and he said that he had been really sick. This was easily a week before he came out with this, so I knew that this had happened. And at that time, he didn't know whether he was going to go public with it. He was having, he was thinking hard about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he has come out with it.
Yes.
He detailed to me, what had happened to him during that period. He became violently ill, and And then, of course, he finally, Roger doesn't like to go to hospitals for any sort of thing, but he finally relented. His wife made him go, and they took the blood and they sent it up to the CDC. And I guess it came back that he had, there was a residue of some indication of polonium in there. And
which killed that Russian spy about 10 years ago or so.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, I know Roger has had a lot of suspicious things happening to his car was been stolen, and it's you know, he's expressed a couple of different times that he had been threatened in some form or another, but this goes way beyond that. I don't know what he can do to protect himself. I mean, you know, if someone wants to get rid of you, they're going to get rid of you.
Yeah, exactly.
I just think it's lucky, and by the graces of God, that he survived this. It's not going to bring Roger down. Roger's always going to be Roger, and he's very strongly convicted in the things he believes in. And, you know, people, this isn't supposed to be a democracy where people are, they have freedom of speech, and if that's not allowable, then we've got more serious problems than I even thought we did.
And he was on the show with me a few months ago. He will not name names on who he thinks may have tried to poison him. But I wonder how they tried to poison him.
Yeah, I wonder too. You know, he eats out a lot. I don't know how many ways this poison can be ingested. I'm reading something right now where it may have. He's just saying he doesn't know. He doesn't know who. He knows it wasn't Bill and Hillary Clinton, and he knows it's not the Russians. But that leaves. You know, it could be
anybody.
Wide open.
Yeah, it really is. Let's take some final calls here for you, St. John. We go to Jack in Waterloo, Iowa. Welcome to the show. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Yeah, you guys are getting me to recall memories I haven't had since I was a teenager. I used to come home and watch Hours of Watergate. I just remember that.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Well, I have a comment and a question. I wanted to say just God bless you, St. John Hunt. You sound like a very personal and sincere American, and I know it's been a long time, but my condolences for your dad's passing and really your mom, too, even back in 72. It touches my heart, but I wanted to ask you, do you have any commentary or opinion on, some people say Obama has had abuse of power and this rise of executive orders. Do you have any sense about if there was some abuse? And I thank you very much, George, for having this guest, and I'll listen off the air.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate it. Go ahead, St. John.
Well, first of all, I appreciate the condolences you that you have in respect to the death of my parents. Obama, you know, I think Obama just continued with the abuses of power that his predecessor, George Bush, continued from his predecessor and on down the line. As the years go on, we can see a widening of political criminal activity, certainly not democratic, what would be considered American activity. I mean, we've lost a lot of civil rights under Obama, and it looks like we're going to have to deal with even more. I just think, you know, I'm at the point where I just don't know what to think. What we can do as people is just always be considerate, always do the right thing, which means don't screw anybody over willingly or knowingly, and just generate, you know, the feeling of helpfulness and empathy towards people that don't have it as good as we have. We're still the greatest country in the world. And we still have the potential to really make a change in this world, and the change in this country needs to occur. I think Obama just sort of continued the path that the Bushes had set forth, and certainly that's evidenced by most of his team were Bush people. But you know, it just comes down to each one of us as human beings. Living righteously and doing the right thing, you know, taking care of our children and being good people, and hopefully, you know, things will get better.
Did your father explain why they broke into the Democratic National Committee headquarters at the Watergate Hotel? What did they want?
Well, you know, he said that there was a lot of different operations going on all at the same time. In other words, James McCord seemed to have his own agenda. My father said McCord was always disappearing for 20 or 30 minutes, going and doing something. And then, of course, one of the Cubans, I think it was Martinez, had kind of his own agenda. He was looking for something else. My father went there, you know, put the team together. Nixon had wanted to find this manuscript that was put together by Castro's internal police, showing and giving evidence of the many, many assassination attempts against his life. And Nixon wanted that document because he wanted to know if he was in that sheet and if that was going to be made public by the Democrats. He felt that the Democrats had that document and that they in fact had it at the DNC, that it was locked up in the safe there. But you know, there's been a lot of speculation about you know, the purpose of that break-in. You know, the DNC, that office had been pretty much vacated. You know, there was just a kind of a skeleton crew there. They'd moved most of their stuff down to Miami, where the convention was going to be held. So they successfully broke in, got in and out of the DNC offices there at Watergate twice before. And it was on this third attempt that that all hell broke loose. And you have to ask yourself, was there, you know, a wider, deeper operation going that allowed this team to break in this third attempt and then send these undercover police officers there in order to arrest and expose them and then trail it back to Nixon to depose Nixon. I mean, that's very possible. You know, the thing about CIA and about the world of intelligence and covert operations is that no one person has the whole story. It's compartmentalization.
They're
pieces. One person has one job and he doesn't know what the larger operation is.
Absolutely. Your father got 35 years for masterminding, but only served 33 months.
That's correct. Yeah. It's a pretty, you know, a pretty harsh, you know, it was pretty harsh for my father. That was a huge sentence, a harsh sentence, and he just couldn't believe it. I mean, he is a guy that, you know, was working under the orders of the President of the United States. In the interview with Dick Frost, it's funny when Nixon says, well, if the president's doing it, it's not illegal. And that's truly what he felt. And, of course, my father, working for that man, you know, felt that he was protected. He could pretty much do mostly anything he wanted to.
Why do I think your father knew so much more about Nixon than he wanted to tell people?
Oh, God. You know, my father probably knew so much more about so many things. I mean, he was one of the last of the old timers. He'd been there since the beginning of CIA and, you know, rose to power within the agency very, very quickly. Within a year or two, he was station chief at different locations all over the world. He was highly regarded, highly respected as a man who he could spend time in the trenches, so to speak. I mean, he was in the Honduras training the Cuban exile brigade for the invasion, and then, you know, flying back and reporting to Dick Helms over cocktails in a tuxedo.
Did he ever talk to you, St. John, about Jimmy Hoffa?
You know, we never spoke about Jimmy Hoffa, but it would have been an interesting conversation, I'm sure. You know,
Hoffa's name has come up in the JFK assassination in some respects.
Yeah, it has. You know, one has to be really careful when researching or reading about JFK assassination. There's a lot of disinformation that's put out there to, you know, cloud the events and you know, turn the attention away from what really happened. That's why books that blatantly blame, you know, that put the complete responsibility on the American Cosa Nostra have to be taken very suspiciously, because there is absolutely no way that the mafia can doctor the autopsy photographs. There's no way that the mafia can call in and orchestrate the autopsy itself. There's no way that they had any control over the body, over the movement of the body, the falsification of his wounds, the investigation by the FBI. These are things that were way past what the mafia was able to do. That's why I know that the mafia, their involvement was such a limited liability. They were kept around just enough to be blamed for something like to be blamed for that in case they needed a fall guy for that. As it turned out, they didn't. And after Kennedy was killed, I think we stopped using the mafia because they weren't mm-hmm. necessary anymore. I think they were put in place to take blame in case we needed to blame some people.
Let's go to Idaho Falls, Idaho. It's Rachel's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Rachel. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey.
Let me take your sticker. St. John, thank you for this. George, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, you're welcome.
I think this sounds, because when I talk to people who don't really understand this, they think it sounds insignificant. But I was in Madison County, George, or in Illinois there.
I know it well.
Yep. And I was I was either in my senior year, I think my senior year of high school, or I'd gotten out. And I don't know, this is Edwardsville, Illinois. This is a small town. This is where, small town USA. And we're in one of the drugstores sitting there having a sandwich or soda or something. And somebody starts talking about that they're still having a hard time dealing with the assassination on JFK. And someone else there said, well, Lyndon Johnson had a big part to play in it. That influenced me for the rest of my life. That impacted me. It was like I came from a really abusive family, and it was like, okay, it's not safe inside and it's not safe outside. But it made me start thinking about how things actually work, not what we were being told in the media, and it was a huge impact. I just wanted to add, I was talking to someone the other day about Castro and explaining to them that I think if the United States had probably taken different moves with him in the beginning, that Cuba might have turned out differently. And it sounds like maybe St. John, you think that too. I think it's sad because there's some stories about Castro that shows that he really had a human side to him. And he was kind of forced into a position in some ways. I'm not saying he was a great guy necessarily, but it makes me wonder if things would have turned out.
I think you're right. No, I totally think you're right. I think if when Castro overthrew Batista, he was not a communist. He was not even leaning towards that. But when he came to the United States and was humiliated and rebuffed by Eisenhower and Vice President Nixon, they did not acknowledge him as the de facto leader of Cuba. He wanted to come to this country and speak before the United Nations and have the United States acknowledge that he was Cuba's
right.
leader.
And they wanted aid and everything else.
And instead they humiliated and embarrassed him and sent him on his way. And of course, Russia knows what's going on. This is an island in our hemisphere, and so the only other place he could turn to for help was to the Russians. And, after the first arms embargo that we placed on Cuba, you take over a country, the first thing you're going to need is some kind of military, and you need, armaments. And we denied that to him. So then the Russians, we created these empty spots, these vacancies that the Russians just fell right into all the way down the line.
Yeah.
And it was only after the Bay of Pigs invasion. Only after the Bay of Pigs invasion did Castro align himself with Russia as a Marxist and a communist.
We did the same thing with Ho Chi Minh in North Vietnam when he basically asked for help. We shunned him. He turned to the Chinese.
Right. So, what do we expect these people to do? And how is it that we're continuing and have continued with these policies? And to what end? If we are a democracy, really interested in freeing non-democratic countries, why is it that we overthrow democratically elected leaders in foreign countries and place puppet leaders from our country in the position of power. That's not democracy at work. That's not freedom.
No, it's not at all. St. John, I want to thank you for being on the program. I appreciate it. Our condolences to what you've gone through over the years, losing parents. I know what that's like. And
maybe a strong person, George.
It's not easy, my friend. And keep playing what you're doing. You, as a matter of fact, I sing and you play. We got to get together one day.
I hope we do. Maybe if you're going to go to either of the conferences next year, we should spend a little bit more time together than we did last year.
You got that right. Okay, take care of yourself. St. John Hunt, the website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And again, his books, a couple of them, Bond of Secrecy, My Life with CIA Spy and Watergate Conspirator E. Howard Hunt. E. Howard Hunt was the mastermind of Watergate, and that was his son we were just talking to. And then Dorothy, the really sad story about his mother's plane crash, a United Airlines plane heading toward Midway Airport in Chicago, crashed in 1972, killing most of the people on that plane. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.